Hello and welcome to the Licensed and Queer podcast, where we're on a mission to uncover why James Bond appeals so much to LGBTQ plus people. Why not see 007 from a different angle?
Hello everyone, this is your month in Bond for, well, it was the month of October, but we had a busy last few days of October. Yeah, so it's no November, but this is our month in Bond for October. I'm Anthony Lobagelis, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely husband and Mr. Licensed to Queer himself, David Lobagelis, MBE.
Oh, I like that introduction.
Yeah. So, with October, we had, it sort of bookended by two big events.
Was that a pun? Book. Ended.
Oh yeah, actually I didn't mean to do that, but yeah, that's what it was.
So are you.
Book ended by two big events that were about, actually, like, it was book ended by two things that were about Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So start of the month, there was an event at Regent Street Cinema, which was organised by Monica
Jumana,
who the
University
author
of Westminster.
And the author of
Bond Girls Riga book.
Yeah. That was celebrating the movie Casino Royale, which we'll get into in a bit. Excuse me while I eat a cheese ball.
I was going to say, these cheese balls are great.
Yeah, I know. People hate when people eat during podcasts.
Do they?
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Is that a no-no?
Yeah, that's a really big, bad thing.
Oh, God, does that mean we're going to get negative feedback? Please don't eat cheese balls while recording your podcast.
And then the other half of the month, we had an event at Pinewood Studios, which celebrated literary James Bond, but that was done to mark the 70th anniversary of the publication of Casino Royale this year.
Yep. So busy.
Busy. We are drinking some champagne because we had a lovely cup of
champagne
dates.
Left over from my birthday, I think.
Yeah. Or was it?
No, it's birthday for my parents.
This was your birthday present of your mum and dad.
Yeah. How's it lasted this long? My birthday was in July.
I think we just forgot.
I think it was there in the lounge.
Because for some reason it was in the lounge. Mm. So the Regent Street event, you want to just give a bit of an intro what it was about?
Yes, so the idea was to have a panel of people introduce Casino Royale.
Yeah.
And the panel of people, it was Kim and me were invited along, Kim Sherwood and me, my Monica. And then we also got Charlie Higgs in there. And then Ian Kinane, who edits a James Bond journal, Fletcher Sykes, who obviously we know Fletcher really well from James Bond Club, and the lovely Steve Dasgupta as well.
Yep.
So the idea was to have a more diverse panel, very intentionally, of Bond fans than you usually find on these things, and to have those different perspectives on Casino Royale, the film. We talked for about 45 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah, I think so.
Before the film actually started.
There was a little brief thing for Q&A, because the talk. It was not a round table, but it was like a panel discussion about why the movie persists, why the movie perhaps...
It was unconventional.
Yeah, and ended up the way that it did as well.
I've been writing about this today, actually.
It was really good, and then they watched the film. It was a very audience participation.
I will take some of the blame/credit for that.
Yeah, we're like, what's a whooping when Daniel Craig came out of the sea and
gave the audience a little bit of a steer on that one.
Yeah, but it was good, and I don't think I'd seen Casino Royale since we watched Secret Cinema.
Hannah Maz.
Oh no, we
watched it
Maz,
a couple of years ago. But I do.
It's not my favorite Daniel Craig movie. Mm.
What's wrong with you?
But I do enjoy it lots. It's probably my second favorite.
After Skyfall, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I really do love Skyfall. I had No Time to Die as well.
Me too.
I think No Time to Die had a massive effect on me. I do really like that thing. But yeah, that was really good. And the great stuff was that after the film, we got the chance to just hang out with some of our Bond friends and chat, and the cocktails were really good.
I still always set my expectations quite low, to be honest. Any kind of event, really. Mm. But they especially were in cinema. A cinema as well. But they really knew they how were to themed make really to good
Bond cocktails. Bond drinks. So really there was a nice Negroni.
The staff were brilliant actually at that cinema, and actually the cinema. This might be a bit of an exclusive. The cinema have suggested that we come back and do another one next year.
Does it have to be Daniel Craig
then? No, it can be anything
we
like.
Can we do View to a Kill?
So it'll probably be an anniversary film, but we'll see how it goes.
That was really good. And it's nothing related to Bond, but well, kind of, because we were staying in the shadow of the Millennium Dome. But we stayed in a really, amazing hotel.
That was nice really cool. Plug.
Like, they're not sponsoring us or anything like that.
No.
It's called Good Hotel. And it's brilliant because it's this floating, it's like a flotilla, floating hotel. There's a really cool little video and information in the hotel that shows you how they got it on the Thames. Mm. But the reason why it's great is it's a lovely room. It's fairly inexpensive when compared to London hotels. You're right by the Platy tubes, so you can get straight into London on the Elizabeth line. Whenever you stay there, because it's a sort of a charity as well, every time you stay there you fund a schools. Child to go to school for a week in a developing country, which is really, really good.
Bed was really comfy as well.
And the bed was really comfy. And they gave you these little Guatemalan worry dolls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got those upstairs. Yeah. I need to talk to my worry dolls at night when I can't sleep.
Yeah.
I'm actually being quite serious.
Look up, if you're looking for a nice place in London, and they had a rooftop bar, and we had freak. It feels like a million miles away now, and it's like autumn has definitely arrived. But at the start of October, we had tremendously good weather.
It was so warm that weekend.
And we were on the rooftop bar of the hotel watching the dome. That was crazy because that was just 4 weeks ago. That was Regent Street. The next thing that was massive in James Bond community, which I know you did have the opportunity to go, but you weren't able to make it, was the Roger Moore auction, which was crazy.
Yeah, because of the trains, I didn't actually get down to look at the... we had special tickets, didn't we? We could have gone and seen the preview, but we didn't get down. But since I got home from work, I had it on in the background.
It was crazy.
It went for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, in our group chat with our friends Hannah and Maz, who've been on the podcast before, they got really into it as well, and they were watching alongside. I think it was just Hannah actually. They were watching. You and Hannah were watching like the live stream, and it was mental because, I remember the week before it happened, I was like, "Oh my god, it'd be really amazing just to own something that Roger Moore had." And one thing that I looked through the catalogue, I saw this mail tidy, sorting your letters and you have your letter opener and stuff like that. And the guide price, which is crazy for a leather letter tidy, but the guide price was £150. And I thought some proceeds going for charity. I don't know.
Everything went for way
exactly,
over the,
but I can pay £150 if it's the reserve price. But just how popular it was, for example, across all of the items together, I think the estimated reserve price, if everything just went for the reserve, was £417,000.
Good lord.
And in the end, everything went for £1.7 million.
Oh, wow, that gives you an
idea.
What the asking price was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some silly stuff. I couldn't believe how much the posters went for, the signed posters.
I do think it's just a lot of people were just like gasping to get something that used to belong to Roger. So that's what they did. Because some of those things like that radio that you use.
Yeah, there was some really random stuff. I'm not even sure what type of radio it was.
Like an AM/FM radio.
Something, I can't remember. I think it had international stations on it. But you could probably pick it up for about 20 quid from Argos or something. But because it had Roger on in Magic Marker, it went for hundreds.
Do you know, it reminded me of a little bit. I'm sure it wasn't the case. But do you know when you go to the next outlet and they buy things in?
Maybe.
Some of these things were Roger would have liked this, but actually...
And, the costumes weren't worn by him in the film.
They were test ones.
I mean, they're still pretty cool, don't get me wrong.
That puffer jacket.
Yeah, I would have loved the View to a Kill snowsuit, even though Roger never wore it.
But that was crazy. But speaking of property of a KBE... and if you follow us on the socials, you've probably already seen this, but David was very honoured to receive a gift earlier this week, which was the property of Roger Moore.
Yeah, definitely. So I was still, it took me a while to process it, to be perfectly honest, but I'd just finished prepping for the interviews at Palmer Studios, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
And we were down in the bar, and I was like, right, that's it, I'm mentally done today. So let's have a martini. And then someone arrived in the bar and sat down, thanked me for doing, you know, leading the interviews the following day with the authors, and then slid across the table a little box.
Yep. And inside this box was a sort of rose gold pin with a red and stripy sort of fabric thing. And it's the official sort of pin for the Order of the British Empire,
which includes CBE, which Roger Moore had in 1999.
Yeah, and obviously MBE, KBE,
which I'm about to have.
Well, you have already. But
well,
yeah,
I have already, but not received the actual Don.
And medal, but basically, when you get the award, it's obviously a massive medal, which are like supposed
which
to
I'm
wear
just going to wear everywhere.
Well, you're supposed to wear at formal events,
going to the shops and everything.
It's too precious sometimes, and it might not be, it's a bit flamboyant. So they do these little pins, and what David was given was actually a pin that belonged to Sir Roger, and apparently had lots of them because he used to just, like, obviously whatever jacket he was wearing.
Well, we don't know he had lots of them, but he definitely had more than one. Yeah. So, you know, but even so, it's still kind of
amazing.
Like, I'm still kind of struggling to process that Roger Moore may have had that one on one of his jackets at some point.
And we've seen some pictures of him wearing, like, the same pin, haven't we, since?
Yeah, definitely. There's loads of photos of him wearing those pins.
I've also seen, like, ones where he's wearing one that looks a different colour, blue, but I wasn't sure whether that was, like, a UNICEF badge.
Yeah, that's a UNICEF badge, yeah.
So that was amazing. So even we didn't have to bid thousands, but you got a little piece of Roger Moore's property.
And I suppose, like, the snowsuit in View to a Kill, even if he didn't wear it, it was still his property. Yeah, so exactly. That's still insanely cool.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that. Before we get to Pinewood, because that was the last of the month, the trailer came out to, what's it called, actually called? Road to 1 Million. It's called 007.
Road to 1 Million.
007 Road to 1 Million, which is like the sort of mashup of... Did you ever watch Fear Factor back in the day?
No.
So it feels to me like a mashup between Fear Factor and that really good TV program, Race Around the World.
Oh, yeah, we love that.
Which is also in America, it's called The Amazing Race.
Oh, right.
And so it's different couples, and they go to different Bond locations, and they have to do... once they're in the Bond location, they have to work out little puzzles to find out which Bond location they need to travel to next.
Oh, you know way more about this than
I do.
Yeah,
what it is, General Stryker from X-Men, what's his name? Brian Cox. He's like the Bond villain.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised he's never actually been in a Bond film. Mm-hmm. So he's a Bond villain. He's setting these, like, eight couples this amazing race, and they're having to travel around the world, and each of these places are like classic Bond locations. So that, like, there's Venice, for example, is one of them.
Oh, is it?
And one of them is like the Alps. They get little clues, so they have to work out what place they've got to go to next and get there on their own, a bit like the amazing like Race Around the World. But where in the Amazing Race, they just get to the place and check into the hotel, and they get told where they're going next. In order to get the clue, they then have to
challenge
a Bond stunt.
Like, I've seen them climbing the crane.
Yeah, so they have
Royale.
To climb, like, that's one that is, like, terrifying. They'll have to climb the crane and then get the clue for the next place where to go to. In Venice, they have to do a speedboat chase. In the Alps, they have to race, Aston Martins.
Oh, wow.
There's this one somewhere, it looks like they're in Morocco or something, and they're having, the woman's having to shimmy across a rope just suspended above, like, a marketplace, and having to get across just on a tight rope. So they're, like, cool little stunts. And that starts November the 10th, and this is, like, the next Friday. This is, like, the first big sort of thing that Eon have done in the post-Craig era. Mm. All the Amazon Prime now has all the Bond films again.
Oh, yeah.
And this will be exclusive to Prime. I'm not sure if they're doing it. I don't know how Prime releases stuff, if they release it weekly or all at once.
I think it'll be weekly, won't it?
Yeah. But yeah, it looks really cool. Like a mixture of like travelogue plus adventure thing. And that's what it feels a bit like Fear Factor, because like these people are having to face, like if you're scared of heights and you could have tried that crane. Oh, I couldn't do that.
I think I'd be all right with the crane one. I
couldn't do the crane one.
Some of the others,
I would do the speedboat driving.
Things involving water and being in water, maybe not.
Yeah, the scuba diving. They've got scuba diving ones.
No, not doing that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's...
Should we have a top of champagne before we talk about Pinewood?
Yep. So we're doing a bit of a simple cocktail today, as it is.
We're only going to have champagne, and then you change your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not complaining.
It's a nice, simple, like quite elegant cocktail.
There's a couple of versions of this on the website. Yeah.
So
one of which is called City of Lovers.
Oh, yeah, from the music video thing. So we're doing a French 75, which is... sparkling wine. You should really have it with champagne, and we are today.
Yes, we are.
But sometimes we have it with Prosecco or Cava. Measure of gin, London Dry, and some lemon juice. And just that's it, basically. We once got tremendously drunk in New Orleans on them with our friends Paul and Alison. Mm. And we had to go and get beignets to soak it all up.
Like 3 a.m.
Yeah. So, yeah. That is the cocktail today. Before we get into Pinewood, obviously the Pinewood thing was about 70th anniversary of James Bond, but there's another British institution that is celebrating its 60th anniversary this month in November, and some of the celebrations have started to happen this week with the Hooniverse launching on BBC. And I just thought it was interesting to talk about James Bond and Doctor Who as quite similar sort of media properties, especially when in terms of regeneration. And this will go with something that you did talk about a little bit in Pinewood.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite interesting with the two things that stick out to me is obviously the regenerations of the Doctors and how the different characters and how the Bond actors and also the different sort of literary versions of Bond can sometimes feel very different too. But the other thing to me, and I know it's not totally accurate because not all of the companions that the Doctor travels with are women, but a lot of them are, particularly in the later series, since the relaunch in 2005, a lot of them have been women who have gone around with it, which sort of feels a bit like Bond girls in a way, although obviously there's, other than... the brief sort of romantic thing with Rose, there was never any sort of romantic...
Amy Pond, what's that?
Well, he kind of marries...
He kind of marries their child,
doesn't he? So that would be a bit odd. So I just thought that's a little link. But in terms of your feelings about them as similar entities, what would you say?
Yeah, I actually brought this up, didn't I, with one of the writers of Doctor Who at Pinewood, the writers of the novels. And my take, I think, is still the same. It's not quite the same as Bond, because I think there's kind of more of a different temperament when you change Doctor Who's.
But they're...
You do get that with Bond as well, like Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton. All that. Yeah, you get that, yeah. But sorry, I was just stirring my drink.
And you, but Doctor Who, I think, has a stronger sense of continuity, which is something that I really love, and I know you're but that's why I got really in the Chris Chibnall years and the Stephen Moffat years. I did get a bit annoyed that they didn't like
stick with continuity.
Continuity, like I want to see Unit. Let's bring back like Torchwood and all that kind of stuff. And they were just making new stories rather than refer to old ones. As someone who reads X-Men, I just like when you've done all that hard work to know all these characters. I want to see them more often.
I think more so than just the you know, what the characters are like. I think it's survived for 60 years because, like Bond, it has adapted. And I know it went through a period of, what was it, like 15 years, 16 years or something, where it wasn't actually
on TV
anymore. And Bond has gone through those periods, not for that duration, admittedly. But it has kept with the times and adapted in some ways. So I think there are some similarities.
I also think in terms of the wider, like, they're both multimedia properties. Like, obviously, Bond is novels as well as films and audio dramas. We sort of Japanese musical. And I think that Doctor Who does that as well in terms of, like, having sort of young adult fiction, like spin-off TV programmes.
Well, yeah, I think it works well for different audiences as well, because there are lots of people who have nostalgia for Doctor Who are older. You know, you could be like 70 years old and have nostalgia for Doctor Who if you were 10 when you saw the first episode. And it's a similar thing with Bond. A lot of people have that nostalgia. I think Doctor Who is really good at kind of getting new audiences. And I think perhaps Bond might even learn something from
that a little bit. And one thing that I think is really great about Doctor Who, I mean, I've never experienced them myself, but I think it's really cool where, say, if you had a favourite James Bond, that you can still see the adventures of that one. Because, like, for example, like the Eighth Doctor, like, he's been so much more expanded as
Paul McGann, through the audio dramas,
audio
the
dramas
big finish,
and the books, than like he ever got on the screen. And I think that's really cool. Like, so it would be really cool if, like, there was like, oh, I like a Roger Moore and I can read a Roger Moore book. Roger Moore Bond.
I suppose that's the thing, they're not supposed to be different. That's what I was trying to get across, that they're
it's just moments in time, isn't it?
And I, you know, I've said multiple times that, or in my head, when I read a Bond book, all the versions just sort of smush together as one.
Yeah.
Rather than me kind of picturing Roger Moore, Sean Connery, Pierce Brosnan, whoever. So, but with Doctor Who, you don't do that, do you? The different Doctors' personalities come through.
Yeah, and they do, like, refer to each other and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I just thought it was worth mentioning. If you're based in the UK, sort of every single episode that they've got is on Doctor Who, is on BBC iPlayer as of now. Specials start again on November the 25th, and 2024 is the new season, which is going to be, like, starting from season one again. And I think that's related to the fact that it's going to be being simulcast on Disney Plus, so it'd be confusing if they called it season 40 or season 14, because they don't get the rights to all of that. But just,
and you might have seen on Instagram or Twitter, I posted the line from Thunderball that was originally referencing Daleks, because obviously Bond has been in cinemas for about the same, just slightly longer than Doctor Who's been on TV. And Doctor Who was massively popular in 1964-65 in the UK. So the might of one of the screenwriters to Thunderball tried to sneak a reference into Daleks, but it didn't pass muster. So it, although actually that reference probably wouldn't have dated.
No, probably
compared
not.
Compared with some other references.
Yeah. So yeah, that's that. And then, obviously the main event, the Pinewood event. So do you want to give a bit of background to what that
and
was?
Where to start, really?
So it was a it was celebrating the 70th anniversary of the publication this year of Casino Royale, like we said. And it was a really packed sort of day in terms of lots of different activities. There was a sort of tour of the grounds of Pinewood Studios, which sort of like pointed out what bits were filmed where and from. And
very
from
famous
Bond.
Hedges.
Yeah, not just that, like, those two in, like, where Chitty Chitty Bang Bang or...
Yeah, Who Dares Win.
That sort of stuff was done. And then there was a talk about the covers that were done by...
Richard Chopping.
Richard Chopping. And
by John Lees Turner, who's an executive of his estate.
And that was really interesting to see, like, this his career and his relationship with Francis Bacon.
Francis Bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
They were sort of in a throuple, weren't they?
Yeah. And so that was, I thought that was very, that was really, really interesting. And then
his partner with Dennis, Francis Bacon and Richard Chopping and Dennis Worth Miller.
Yeah. So that was really interesting. And like, quite queer, obviously. And,
yeah.
One so of the highlights for me, before we get to your part, mm-hmm. was I thought we'd all have a little bit of a chuckle.
Because
they played the very first ever adaptation of a James Bond on the screen, and it was the TV adaptation from CBS in 1954, which was part of this, it used to be a weekly sort of anthology TV program,
Climax,
and where they used to do like plays, basically TV plays,
novels in an hour.
Yeah. And and it was filmed live, and it was broadcast live, so they were watching it. When you watch it, you're watching it live. And this was the very first ever time James Bond appeared on screen. But he was Jimmy Bond.
Card sharp, Jimmy Bond.
Because he was American.
But Felix Leiter was Clarence Leiter.
Yeah. And
British.
Vesper was sort of merged
with Valerie Mathis.
With Mathis. So that was a bit weird as well. But those were your main characters. And then you had Lechiffre.
Mm-hmm.
Who was played by Peter Law. Peter Lorre, yeah. And he was incredible. And, I thought we'd have a bit of a chuckle. Like, oh, how silly. Mm-hmm. Like, American James Bond, British Felix Leiter, and French, like, Swiss, Dutch,
whatever.
Belgian. Yeah, she's
Belgian.
She's Belgian.
All right.
Mathis. But it was actually really good. It was very, like, James Bond by way of 1950s, 1940s, like noir detective.
Yeah, definitely.
Very sort of like gritty.
Peter Lorre is most famous for being a villain in the Maltese Falcon, so you kind of cast him for that reason.
There was that, like Kim mentioned it in her Girl with the Golden Pen, but there's really that great line was like, are you the guy that was shot? You could, no, I was the guy that they...
Yeah, very kind of hard-boiled dialogue, which almost made its way into Dr. No, that sort of dialogue. It would have really dated it because that was the 60s or on the 50s, so...
But it's really cool to see something that was like...
Because that dialogue's not in the book.
Yeah, we've made it in a couple of years of the actual book coming out. But the crux of the story was there.
Yeah, the DNA of it. And actually some of the choices you can kind of see reflected in the 2006 version as well.
Yeah, and I just thought it was really... So it is available on YouTube. And so if you've thought of putting it off because you thought it's a bit naff, it actually isn't. It's really good. And it's well worth your watch. It's quite funny if you watch the version where they do the intro, because they have like a narrator at the climax. Must have had a narrator at the start, a bit like the Twilight Zone, where the man talks in that funny, scary voice about what you're going to see today. And he holds one of those shoes. Do you know what they do?
He explains what a shoe does.
Yeah, but like his language is like, it's made millions for a few, a small few. But it's made like beggars of more,
right? Yeah.
Like really like fun dialogue. But then at the very end, like I said, he bookends it. And at the very end, because obviously it was a live TV program, they reference things that were happening at the time, and they talk about like salute the workers, and it was just a bit like quite funny. And then afterwards, they on the Pinewood thing that we watched, they actually had an interview with the actor who played James Bond.
Yeah, Harry Nelson.
Yeah, and that was interesting too. First ever James Bond and American. Like I said, I was surprised how good it was. So please, if you fancy it, watch it because it is good. And let us know what you think. But the main part of the event was that David was doing an interview with six different authors linked to James Bond, four novelists, Kim Sherwood, Charlie Higson, Steve Cole, and Raymond Benson, who have all written Bond at different points in, or James Bond books in Kim's point of view, in different periods of their history, and then two Fleming autobiographies. The newest one, which was by Nicholas Shakespeare, which has come out this month.
Yeah, I think it was the 7th of October. Oh, no, it might have actually been Bond Day, the 5th of October.
Yeah. And then the there was a quite an important biography of Fleming that was released in the
Andrew Lycett. It's an unauthorized biography, an official one. It was the first biography of Fleming that I had read. He's an absolutely engrossing book.
Yeah.
I did put on Twitter the other day, I said, two great biographies of Fleming, which one do you read? Both, of course.
Yeah.
And I do stand by that. I haven't quite finished the Nicholas Shakespeare one because there's been so much other stuff to do. But it's really well written, really well researched. Andrew Lycett's is not as long as the Nicholas Shakespeare, obviously really well written, really well researched. So you're just going to have to read both, to be honest.
Yeah, and they, I haven't read any of them, but the Nicholas Shakespeare one does sound quite, it'd be quite an entertaining read, even though it's quite long. It's because, like, obviously he's a novelist. So, like, I imagine
Nicholas Shakespeare goes in a lot more on the early years. So Andrew Lycett sort of doesn't shortcut the Fleming early years at all. He's just very succinct.
Yeah.
So you get, Andrew Lycett packs a lot into a paragraph. And for that reason, it's probably more of a page turner than the Nicholas Shakespeare one. Which isn't to say the Nicholas Shakespeare one is dull. It's just the Andrew Lycett one. When I read it the first time, I think I raced through it in a couple of days. Yeah. It's really good.
There's a really great story in the Nicholas Shakespeare one that he told about, like, Ian Fleming's funeral. Only 14 people went to the funeral or thereabouts. And as the celebrant, it would have been a vicar, but as he was, like, starting the, as he was there, there was a lady on the front, one of the front benches, and she was sobbing, like, uncontrollably. So the celebrant, like, was like, oh, okay, well, that must be the widow. So started the funeral, and everyone was like, what's going on? Because, like, Ian Fleming's wife's not here yet. And then suddenly, halfway through the stuff, they had to start the funeral again because Ian Fleming's wife arrived with the casket.
Yep.
Like, it's a bit weird that he didn't notice that the casket wasn't there. But what?
You know what? I'm regretting us because we were near that area. I'm regretting us not visiting Fleming's grave in the summer.
But, well, no, yeah,
you know, we can. He won't go anywhere.
Another time, yeah. but then, obviously, David interviewed all these authors. It was an hour and 45 minutes, and I have to say, it is, in your, like, sort of professional sort of stuff that you've done in the Bond world, it's one of the proudest things I was. You were, like, absolutely brilliant, and so many lovely things people have said, but, like, you were so, like, you'd researched so much. Like, the past month, all David has done is read books from these people.
In full truth, I've been doing it since May.
Yeah. So yeah. You you had about 12 minutes with each of these people.
Yeah.
And then there were some fantastic extracts from the novels that were read by Thomas Wheatley and
Madeline Smith.
Madeline Smith. And I've met Madeline a few times. And I've always thought she's lovely and great fun. But I had a new appreciation for quite how talented she is because she read an extract from a Steve Cole young Bond book, but also
Double or Nothing.
And, like, I said to her afterwards, like, you need to do audiobooks. Mm. Like, her voice was so good. And she really, you could tell that she'd, like, spent a lot of time, like, reading them lots of times and trying to work out, like, how she wanted to perform it. And they were performances. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
She was absolutely brilliant. And then Thomas Wheatley was just a lovely man.
Oh, gosh, such a lovely man. I forgot to tell you, actually, he's emailed me saying he's really enjoying the website.
Oh, that's really good.
So, honestly. And it was like dream come true to meet. As we've said, we've met Madeline a few times. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
I'd never met Thomas Wheatley.
Yeah.
And he is just such a lovely man. And you know how much I love that character anyway, in Living Daylights, how much I quote that character.
And the extracts he read that you chose as well, but, like, the reading Casino Royale was brilliant.
Mm.
And the bit where I thought was, I thought the extract he read on His Majesty's Secret Service.
His favourite to read aloud,
really?
I think, because he liked doing the voice of M.
Oh, yeah.
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 And kind of having that imperious intonation.
Which one did he do as well? That he did one more, didn't he?
Yeah, he did Casino Royale and
Zero Minus Ten.
That's it, Zero Minus Ten.
Yeah.
It's quite funny with Zero Minus Ten because I basically chose a sex scene. Because I love that opening chapter, 0-10.
Yeah.
And me and Raymond were kind of like, because Thomas is, you know, he has such a gorgeous voice.
Yeah.
And he was reading this, not entirely serious passage, but Raymond and me were like creasing.
It's really interesting as well, because even though he read it, it's a very female led. So that one you could have actually given to Maddie reading.
Yeah.
But it was very, very good. He was a lovely man, really, really nice to chat to. And it was great hearing from all of these authors. Basically, the crux going through a lot of the things was we all have a different sort of vision in our head of who James Bond is. And if you spoke to somebody who you know, even if you're really good friends with them, and you ask them what their favourite thing about James Bond was, you'd likely get a different answer, but both obviously those are correct. But it's interesting that how something that's quite so well known can be interpreted in so many ways, and you explore that through all the different books.
Yeah, it was like, why do people love James Bond? It was kind of the simple version, but then kind of follow-up questions were about that. So, you know, for instance, I talked with Kim about Bond being kind-hearted and that being kind of at the root of these issues, because a lot of people think Bond is cold-hearted, I always think Bond is very much like a Rorschach test. People can kind of find, I think what they pick out of Bond reflects very much on who they are as a person.
And you spoke with Raymond a bit about sort of he had a very light direction in the fact that he was told, like, we want this to be a little bit in line with the movies.
Well, yeah, it wasn't a light direction. It was like, you need to bring this in line with the films, have a female M. But Raymond was like, do whatever, I'm not changing the characters, essentially, Fleming's Bond.
And he talks about the John Gardner books as well, isn't he? Yeah. His books are similar way to John Gardner's, where John Gardner just picked up Fleming's Bond and put him in the 80s, and he just moved him onto the 90s, basically. Mm-hmm. And then obviously there was some interesting bits because Charlie Higson has written Bond in like both the young
900 year time gap between the periods he's written in,
and his version of Bond with this year's novel is the most up to date and current.
Yeah,
Bond.
Kimchi eating Bond.
And then you obviously spoke with
Steve
about,
particularly about
Doctor Who, because
he's written a lot of Doctor Who
stuff, but also about, because he had to follow on Charlie
with four book sequence in which Bond becomes increasingly an individualist, someone who can't rely on other people in his four books.
Yeah.
So we talked about that arc. That part of the character always interests me.
Yeah. And you've those are some of the books that you, some of the Bond novels you hadn't actually read until recently, had though they?
So the young Bond ones I dipped in and out of, but that was part of my research. I had to make sure I'd read those before this session, so I knew what I was talking about.
And because we were in the area the day before, we had a explore around Eton, didn't we?
We did. We popped in. Windsor itself was a little bit miserable in the rain and a little bit too touristy, but Eton was quite nice.
Yeah, Eton was quite nice. Even though we were found where James Bond...
Yeah, when he boarded.
Where he boarded.
Oh, no, where Fleming boarded.
Fleming boarded.
I think that's where Higson puts him as well.
Yeah, so that was that. And you, like I said, that your part of it was fantastic, and you did...
Thank you,
Jane. People were so complimentary, and you were. You were so, on it in terms of timings, and it looked effortless, even though I know it wasn't, because I know you put a lot of work
into it. I was a little bit sweaty.
Yeah.
Mostly about timings.
And you're sitting on a very uncomfortable sofa.
On a very uncomfortable sofa. But when... that's the issue with those things, because if you want to... You know, I genuinely wanted to get into a really good conversation with everyone. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, we only have a maximum of 15 minutes per person.
Yeah.
So... how do I engineer this that I don't be rude and cut people off at the end?
Yeah.
And so and you, that you was never, going
that never,
my head.
That never happened. And you kind of left people wanting more. And for some people who want more, obviously, you've interviewed Kim, Charlie
and
Raymond on the website. Yeah. And one of the highlights for the weekend for me, I became best friends with Raymond Benson's wife.
Oh, yeah. You Randy, two have been absolute politics
so
nerds.
We were just chatting for hours about politics. And then in the evening as well at the hotel we were staying at, I love Randy, his wife, and we were chatting all night. So that was lovely. There was some other stuff as well. There was amazing food and drink at the at the event, and then there's an artist alley full of treasures, and we bought lots of stuff. I bought a Tomorrow Never Dies Action Man, which was 1999 released. There was Action Man is like worldwide, isn't it? Action Man did.
I think it's more of a British thing.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, Action Man. Yeah, G.O. American has G.O. Joe, isn't it? So Action Man is a British toy. And in the 90s, they did a collection that was related to James Bond. And they had a Wish Now, because I looked, and they all go for crazy money now.
Oh, do they?
They had them all there.
Yeah.
And they were £50 each. I wish I would have just bought them all.
Never mind.
But I bought one which I wanted, which is Tomorrow Never Dies, which is my favourite Pierce Brosnan one. And also it's a one where he's wearing a tux. The other one that was great was The World Is Not Enough, where he's in that boiler suit.
Yeah.
But it's 14-inch action figure. And it also comes with a cell from the movie, Tomorrow Never Dies. And the cell in this one,
it's from the party. It's
when Paris slaps Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool. And I did open the box, and he's now next to my vintage Barbies.
Yeah, it's more fun to play with them, isn't it?
He's next to my vintage Barbies. And the box is really good condition. So, like, if I see them at the future events, I will pick up the rest. There's the Brosnan ones, and there's also like
Tim Connery and a Roger Moore. Yeah, Spoil of Me.
We're jumping off with a parachute. Yeah, yeah.
What's great is that Craig did an article for the website about Action Man Bond.
Oh, really?
Recently inspired by his viewing of the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
So it's actually cool that we own an Action Man now.
And I also, speaking of that as well, because I have a small collection of vintage Barbies from the 1950s and 60s, I have like the first ever Barbie, which I won't tell you how much it cost, but it was
I don't think you've told me how much it cost, and I don't want to know.
Yeah, but it was it wasn't mint in the box, so it wasn't crazy expensive.
Didn't she come with an interesting accessory?
She came with a hand grenade for some reason.
Randomly.
So on the shelf together, it's quite cool because it looks like
swimsuit Barbie with a hand grenade.
It looks very
like Thunderball.
It looks like they're protecting Alan and Midge, and they're the Bond girl and Bond, and he's in the tux, so that's really cool. I did want to see if we could put the tux from him on Alan, but Alan's quite slim, and
I thought it might swamp him.
Yeah, so that's cool. If I see any more, I will probably pick them up. And then we also picked up loads of other little bits and bobs. You've got some really great first editions, and
yeah, I got book, first club edition editions, of Colonel Sun, which is that lovely Dali like cover. Yeah. And some other ones, yeah.
And we got a picture of the Queen that's in Bond's office.
Yeah, yeah. The famous piece. We need to put it on the wall, actually. Yeah, I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah. So that was that. This was a Bond Stars event. We haven't mentioned that. This is a Bond Stars event. So, like,
in association with the Imploring Publications, because Corinne, managing director.
And the Alpine was there as well.
Publishing manager. Simon was there as well. Yeah, and the Alpine. Alpine from Double or Nothing, which features on the paperback. That was there. So we all have photos with that.
Yep.
Great car.
So I would definitely want to go to another Bond Stars event. I thought that was really cool. And
he's hoping they do another Pinewood one, because the organiser, Gareth, said that that might be the last time they ever get that opportunity.
Yeah, well, that was a cool thing. Like, we were like, where the artist alley was, where there's all these different Bond stuff you could buy, there was a door toward the end. There's a sign saying that you can't go past this point.
Yeah.
And then to the right was the door to Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, Star Wars.
You're it? Actually kind of burying the lead here. You always say that I do that.
What's that?
Because right by that doorway to Lucasfilm, there was a photo of Bond and Moneypenny.
Oh yeah, we've done,
and this has blown up on social media. So I can't remember who suggested it. You were just like, I have to go and take a photo of Kim and Nick.
Kim wanted
a photo with her husband, so we.
And then Kim didn't know that across from there was a picture of Piers.
I see. I missed that bit. So, I wasn't there at that point.
Like, she had the picture doing the Piers pose as well.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah. I think that's our month in Bond. Quick thing though, because it was spooky season earlier in the week, and we're in November now, but spooky articles on the website.
So Callum McKelvey last year wrote a really good article about the horror elements in Bond, and then we did a podcast version. So I've placed the links for that in the link tree, and you can find all that stuff on the website as well. If you're still in a spooky mood.
Yep.
I'm really great.
Going to carry on with my reading of the books. I've been a bit,
rubbish.
Distracted with Britney Spears' book, which is not very Bond-like.
You need to get back to From Russia With Love. Or skip ahead and read the story Octopussy, because you've just bought the new version.
Yeah, bought the new version. But we'll be back in the end of November, and one of those stories we'll have is when David arrives at his investiture on a parachute.
In a parachute. What a great day to become an MBE.
Yeah.
Like Gustav Graves.
See you later.
Bye-bye.